At InDigital, we know the public safety professionals hold themselves to a high standard. In fact, standard doesn't do it justice. In over 25 years working alongside you, carrying millions of calls over our IP networks, your dedication has inspired us. That's why our ESINet goes beyond industry standards, not only I3 compliant, but designed to adapt to future development for a network you can count on when it matters most. Learn more at InDigital.net.
Carbyne, it's multimedia. You can get text, translate to whatever language, getting away with the legacy equipment and going into a cloud-based solution.
It's the first time in U.S. history that we have an EZNet through cloud-native call handling.
As a police officer, to have the victim go video, that's unheard of.
You're getting upgrades every month, not every year.
To schedule your free Carbyne demo, please visit carbyne.com/WTT.
If Within the Trenches has ever taught you something, opened your eyes to what it is like to be a 911 dispatcher, or has inspired you to become one, then help support us and join our Patreon. Get exclusive bonus content, one-of-a-kind swag, discounts on merchandise, ad-free early access to new episodes, and much more. To join, please visit patreon.com/WTTpodcast. And if you're an industry partner, we have something for you as well. And now, for the show.
This is Jordan, and you're listening to the Code 7 Podcast Network.
Warning. This episode contains the three A's of podcasting: adult content, adult language, and awesomeness. You've been warned.
Welcome to Within the Trenches. True stories from the 911 dispatchers who live them.
Hey, what's going on? This is Ricardo with the Code 7 Podcast Network, and this is going to be Within the Trenches, True Stories from the 911 Dispatchers Who Live Them. This episode is sponsored by InDigital as well as Carbyne, and a big shout out to patrons as always. And right now, I am currently recording live. We're live here at the 2022 Indiana Professionals 911 Professionals Conference, and it has been an amazing time here. And just right off the bat, I'm going to introduce my guest. My guest today is Veronica, and she is a supervisor at Johnson County right here out of Indiana. How's it going?
Good. How are you?
I am doing good. It's a little warm here, right?
It is a little warm.
Yeah. Yesterday, though,
it was freezing.
Oh, what? In here? You felt like it was in here?
Well, I didn't come in here yesterday, but
Yes, the other rooms. Yes, yeah, it was super cold when we were setting up in here. It was hot enough that all of this was sweating. I was just sweating. It was down my back and everything. I was like, holy hell! And someone walks by and they said, "We already told them to turn it up. We're hot too." Yeah. So it was interesting because after we were done here, Rob and I ended up packing up and going over to the room to do Imagine Listening and stuff. And as soon as we walked out, it was just instant icebox. I was like, oh, that is so good. It is so good.
It always feels great when you walk into the cold air like that.
Right? Yeah. Yes. Yeah. So is this your first time at this conference specifically? Or
it is.
Mm-hmm. Oh, awesome. Well, what have you thought so far? There's been a lot of sessions, a lot of different things going on.
I listened to Rob talk. Mm-hmm. I listened to his class. I listened to another class. The gentleman was from New Hampshire, mm-hmm. and one from the guy who worked 9/11. There's just been a lot of really good ones.
Yeah.
Yeah. lot that's made me think about what I want to do when I go back.
Yes, no, that's good. That's probably one of the best things when you come to these conferences, because, you know, of course, there's a lot of great sessions, but also the networking. You know, sometimes the networking alone, you end up going back with also, you know, people that you know or that you'll have, you know, friendships with for a long time, you know, especially because you're learning from other people too. You know, mm-hmm. you find out that it's not just your center, you know, that's going through certain things.
Yeah. And I've worked at a few different centers
throughout
Indiana. So when we come to these kind of trainings and conferences and stuff like this, Heath and Travis are always like, man, we just can't take you anywhere. You know, everybody. And I'm like, I can't help it.
Yeah.
I just have worked a few places.
That's a good thing. That is a very good thing, Heath and Travis. So let's talk about that. You know, as you're talking about, you know, different places that you've gone to for trainings and such, how did you get into public safety to begin with?
So to get into public safety, I met my fiance. Typical dispatcher story. He was a police officer. Yeah. I was not a dispatcher, however. We worked at the airport. He was an airport police officer, and I was a public safety officer. Mm-hmm. I was one of the horrible people that stood out on the curbs telling people to move their cars.
Oh, you are one of them, okay.
And we left there, and we moved to Georgia. Mm-hmm. And I didn't know what to do. I was young. I had no idea what I wanted to do. And he's like, I think you would be a really good dispatcher. You should apply. So I put in applications in a few places, and one of them hired me. And that's the rest is history.
Oh, man. And so you've been doing this for about 15 years now, right? Something like that?
Since 2006-ish, yeah.
So then when you got into this, did you happen to have a chance to do like a sit-along or anything, like go into dispatch and kind of see, you know, what it was all about beforehand?
I did. So when I started dispatching, I was in Georgia, like I said, right outside of Atlanta in Gwinnett County. Mm-hmm. The dispatch center was in a town called Lawrenceville. And their training was just amazing, like amazing. It was more like a dispatch academy, lasted for months before we even saw the floor, like on our own or with our trainers or anything. But we did, part of it was going to sit in the room and listen to calls and listen to the radios. And so, yeah.
So did it, when you were listening and everything, did it kind of get in your blood already right there? Were you, where you were all about it?
Yep.
Yes. That's what I love to hear. I was kind of the same way, you know, when I got in originally, I didn't know what to expect, but, and even after the very first call on the first night, my first shift, which I was freaking out about, you know, I observed my trainer take a call, and then he told me that I was next, and I thought he's got to be joking, but he wasn't, you know, yeah. And I went into it, but immediately it was just like that I thought, This is it. Like, yeah, this is going to be good.
This is me.
Yeah. So then what was training like for you then?
It was a lot there because, like I said, it was like a whole academy. Like, it lasted for months, and there were days that they still use TIN codes and signal codes and stuff there. And those on their own were a lot. And trying to learn, like, get your radio ear and understand radio traffic, because everything can sound different.
Right.
Every time you listen to it. Mm-hmm. If you know what they said, you're going to hear what they said, right? But if you don't understand it the first time, it's hard. So, yeah, that was a lot, learning where all the fire stations were. It wasn't a small county. yeah, they really did lay a good foundation for the rest of my training and the rest of my career.
See, that's pretty awesome too, because, and you're right, you know, you have to develop that dispatcher ear and everything. If you've never listened to any traffic like that before. Mm-hmm. And for me, I spent 3.5 years in the police department that I started at in Central Florida. I went back home to Southwest Michigan and finished off my dispatch career there in the county that I grew up in. But there was another county that I was trying to get into at the same time. And one of the things, and I kind of felt bad for other people that were there who might not have had any of that training, because the very first test, they had about 30 or 35 of us in a big room, kind of like this, where the acoustics aren't that great. And, you know, it's very echoey, you know, and I'm not sure if that's a word, echoey, but anyway, over the speaker system that they had, they played radio traffic. So what they wanted us to do, everyone had a piece of paper and a pen, and they wanted us to write down what they thought the officer was talking to the dispatcher about. And going off of that, they narrowed it down to about 10 people.
Wow.
And luckily, like I said, I had that 3.5 years already. I had already developed that dispatcher ear, but it took me a little bit in the very beginning. Mm-hmm. Because it sounded like everyone was just eating their mic, you know.
And I don't understand. Some of them still do,
right? So, yes. Like,
even now, we're like, oh my gosh, just take your mic away a little bit so we can understand and not make you have to repeat 5 million times.
Yes, exactly. Or have you have to click us that we don't really like.
No, I will click you back.
Yeah, see, there you go. Very nice. So then, you know, you're going through that time, you know, you said the training program was extensive, but it was also a great one as well.
Yes.
And, you know, you developed your ear and everything else. Do you remember, you know, some of those earlier calls there at that first agency at all?
There are just like a couple mm-hmm. that stick out. So one of our more common like EMS fire calls or lift assists. So on this particular lift assist call, I didn't ask if the husband was conscious or breathing, and they got there and he was deceased. And from then on, I never not asked. I don't care if they say they're not hurt, they're okay, they just need help getting up. No, I need to know that they're awake and breathing.
Yes.
And then the very last call that I took at that center was from my fiance, which how he got me on the phone in the first place is amazing, because it was not a small center. There are multiple people answering the phone, but we were getting ready to move back to Indiana, and I had the only car and our phone had been shut off at home. So he was using a neighbor's phone that he could only call 911 from. Mm-hmm. And, got me, and yeah, I was done after that, because he like called me to tell me that our dog was dying and I needed to come home so he could take him to the vet. And
wow,
yeah,
what are the odds? So I'm a firm believer that there are some phone calls that are meant for us. Like there's something, either, you know, something with us in relation to their call, whether it be basically something that we've dealt with in our own lives, you know, our experience or something like that. You know, as an example, you know, when my grandmother passed away, I was one who took that call, and I was thinking the same thing, like, what are the odds that I would be the one to take that call? But then, you know, here you are as well, and you're the one who ends up getting the call from your fiance. Like it was meant for you. That's all I could
crazy.
Say.
Yeah. I couldn't go back after that. I was like, no, there's no way. I mean, I had already put in my notice. It wasn't like I just got up and walked away. Like, I was leaving already anyways, but after that I was done. I couldn't. I was like, I can't. I've already heard him on the phone now and I can't. Yeah.
Wow. So then you, after that call, you end up, you know, not going back. But is it around that time that you were leaving, that you were moving here to the state, to Indiana?
Yeah, we were moving back to Indiana because I'm originally from here, but we had moved down there. We were moving back. I already had a job lined up here at IFD. Mm-hmm. So I went there and went through training and was there for a little bit. And from there, I went to Monroe County and worked with Jeff Schimmer.
Yeah.
And then from Monroe County, I went to Hendricks County because it was close to home. For Monroe County, I drove like an hour each way.
Oh, geez.
Because I lived in Hendricks County. So
okay,
when I got
when
I got that, it was like 10 minute drive. And I'm like, yeah. That's, and then I came here to Johnson County.
Nice. So then
I've been around the state a little bit.
So then you get to Johnson County and all. And then, you know, what do you remember some of those earlier calls there at Johnson then? And I guess also what was kind of the difference between some of these centers? Like, you know, Georgia sounds like it was a lot bigger, but also, you know, depending on the area in Indiana or really any state for that matter, wherever you're in, it could be bigger than what it was in Georgia as well, or the amount of people who are on the floor or the area that you cover. You know, what were some of the differences?
I have not worked in a center in Indiana that was anywhere near as big as the one in Georgia.
Oh, really?
And it was so busy all the time because you had multiple interstates running through the county. But the biggest difference, I guess, going from like starting here, I was just doing fire, which ended up not really, I mean, I didn't dislike it.
Yeah.
But I needed the adrenaline of the police side because that was my, that was my passion. I loved that side of it.
Yeah.
So just going from like IFD to where you have all of these apparatus, no volunteer stuff, to going to a county like Monroe, where you've got like Bloomington at the time and a whole bunch of volunteers. So like that was different, or reserve officers and stuff like that. So,
wow,
just the size and like the busyness,
yeah,
and volunteers and reserves, every place is different. And then the way that everybody has their SOPs and the way they do things, it's a learning curve every time.
Yeah. Yeah. No, definitely. You have to learn how everybody works. And, you know, different personalities, you know, yeah, in the center as well. And then you just kind of fit in, you start meshing in and everything else. Mm-hmm. But of course, even in that beginning, when you're still trying to figure everything out with folks, when the shit hits the fan, like everyone is working, you know,
well-oiled
machine. Yeah, yes. It's just going and going. And I those are the moments that I miss from dispatch. I've been out of dispatch for 9 years now, but those are the ones that I miss, where, you know, something could be going on or nothing going on. Mm-hmm. And then we're just plugging away, just kicking, yes, ass and taking names. And then when you're done, you get that, we did that.
Yeah.
Like, we and just did like, that.
You guys were awesome.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. That's probably one of the best feelings. I love that.
For sure.
And what are some of the calls that stick with you? Like, there are three calls that we're going to be talking about here in a moment, but other than those calls, and of course, if you feel comfortable talking about it as well, what are some of those calls that kind of stick with you?
One of the calls from Johnson County that sticks with me is, we got a call of like a drive-by shooting, in an apartment complex. And, I ended up being the one that got this woman on the phone, hysterical, and she said that she thought it was her son that had been shot. But she was still inside, so she didn't know. And during the course of the call, she walked outside and did see that it was him. And I won't ever, ever forget the scream that I heard come from her. It's just, yeah.
That's the hard. That's one of the hard parts, right? One of the hardest parts about this profession is that there are certain things that stick with you. For one, like, mm-hmm, the scream, you know, and there could be a trigger, you know, there could be a movie that you watch or a show or something where the scream sounds similar.
Yes.
And like, there are seriously some episodes of Law and Order SVU that when they start playing some audio or they're discussing certain storylines or dialogue that's in the storyline, I flash back sometimes to some, yeah, of the calls that I took, and there have been a couple where I've walked out of the room for just a moment, and then there's a commercial break, and then I come back. I'm like, oh man, I didn't think that affected me like that.
Yeah, or yeah, like driving by someplace that you know where, right, something happened, or yeah.
Yeah, you know, you could be driving home, passing, you know, that complex or something, not thinking about it, and then noticing, and
yeah,
and then it hits you. You know, mm-hmm, it's an interesting thing.
Yeah. One of the other ones that I have from Johnson County wasn't like in the beginning. It was pretty recent, actually. And I have to give a shout out to my assistant supervisor, Eliza, mm-hmm, because we worked with Bartersville Fire to get a woman to the hospital for a transplant. She was coming from Brown County,
uh-huh,
and only had an hour to get to downtown Indianapolis. And it was storming and rainy and traffic. So Brown County transferred her to us because they called while they were driving. Mm-hmm. But Brown County, they were too far north for Brown County to be able to do anything. They were going to be in our county. So Liza and I worked with the sheriff's department and the fire department to try and get some sort of ride for her there so that she made it in time. So we ended up, it was storming, so everybody was busy. Our Bartersville medic got off of the run that they were on. So I just marked them out and said, hey, go back to your station. This is what we're going to do. And they got her there within like, she had seconds. She was going up the elevator in the hospital and they called her asking her where she was at. And she got her transplant. So that was really, wow, cool.
See,
so it's not all like doom and gloom.
Right. Yeah. No, there's also saves yeah, like that. And you all definitely deserve the, you know, the credit to do, because who else would be there to be able to put that all together?
Yeah.
And because of all of your hard work and getting everything coordinated, connecting. She got there.
Yeah.
Just barely. She got there. That's the point. And yeah. that's amazing.
And it was really cool today because they talked about it in the keynote this morning.
That's awesome.
But afterwards, a girl from another county came up to me and told me about how when they read about it, when it happened, her and her mom were just crying, bawling because her mom needed transplants and that could have been her. And they were just so happy that somebody, and my heart, like it just, to hear somebody say that it's something that I did affected them like that.
Right.
That's the first time that's happened in 15 years. And it was pretty amazing.
I can feel it from you right now. Like, you got me in the feels. Like that's
that was pretty amazing.
Right. Yeah. Because you don't ever get to hear stuff like that, right? Yeah. You don't ever get to hear a lot of those things. Sometimes, you know, you do, you get the honor to be able to be connected with somebody, right? Mm-hmm. But it doesn't always happen. So to be able to hear it is just a good feeling.
Yes.
Damn. Well done.
No, it was an amazing feeling. I'm so glad that she came up and talked to me.
And you know, also there's a lot of people that I've talked to who have said, you know, you will never know the impact of everything that you do or the ripple effect of that impact, you know, how it affects people. But
for sure, that's the first ripple that I've got, and I loved it. Loved it.
That is amazing. That is so good. Now, there was a span, so we're about to get into this part here. There's a span of how much time was this now?
Like, I think it was about 8 weeks.
8 weeks.
8 weeks. I had a lot of really bad incidents that I was there for.
Yes. So, you know, we're gonna get through this. We're gonna kind of dissect them a little bit, but also kind of talk about, you know, how you've been from that time and how things have transpired in regards to like mental health and wellness. You know, how has the center worked with that? Because, you know, there's a lot of places out there where there's a lot of folks like us taking these types of calls and they don't have anyone to turn to.
Yeah,
right.
Sure.
And sharing stories like this is so good because folks that don't have the resources or don't have the people to turn to, they can listen to these stories and one, know that they're not alone. And two, know that they can reach out to the greater population of this thin gold line. So again, thank you for coming on and for being open and sharing these stories and everything. And so the first one that we're going to touch on, and again, you said there's about 7 or 8 weeks that you were taking all of these calls. There's three that we're going to focus on here. And this first one, it has to do with some drowning. So kind of walk us through this. What exactly happened?
So when we first started getting calls, it was a very busy night. And it was in Greenwood. And so it's generally busier there anyways. They stay pretty busy. So when we first started getting calls, it was just some kids playing around our retention pond. Nothing super emergent that would take precedent over another emergent call, right? Just a normal kids are playing around the pond kind of call. I had actually gotten up and went to the restroom, and all of a sudden I start getting texts when I'm in the restroom, like, is IFD diving route, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, what is happening? So I get back out there, and we had gotten calls that the kids had gone into the pond. So we have all kinds of apparatus at this point going, officers, and just, it was so much, like, quickly, because it didn't start out like that. Like, you know, when you get those kind of calls at first, and it's, oh my gosh, somebody's drowning, or, you know, and it's that right from the start, you're kind of ready for what you need to do, right?
Right.
And, but it didn't. So we got all of the people going, and unfortunately it didn't end the way that we wanted it to end. And a couple kids did pass away. But yeah, that just kind of kicked everything off. And from there, it was just kind of a whirlwind of 8 weeks.
So with a call like that, so actually, first of all, there at the county center that you work at, how many people are on the floor at a time?
Anywhere between 5 and 7.
Okay, 5 and 7. And for whatever reason, you seem to be the one who is taking the brunt of all of these calls along with everyone else. Yeah.
There were a few of us that were pulling a lot of overtime.
Yeah.
But yes, it was to the point I was getting you again messages right. when things would happen. Yeah. So I was there.
Yeah. So then let's, you know, for this one specifically, you know, you go through it. And it's not one thing, you know, for those who are watching and listening right now, it's not one thing to just take that call. But after that call, you don't really get a chance to stop. You know, you go to the next call, but in the back of your mind, while you're still dealing with the one call, whatever call you're on at that time, you're also thinking about their rescue or in this case, you know, search or recovery or whichever, how it was going. That is on your mind as well.
Yes.
You know, there's so much that's going on with all of it. And it's almost like we've got, you know, several. I like to think of it that, you know, dispatchers and call takers, we are using more percentages of our brain than others, because there are so many things going on, so many things that we have to pay attention to, so many other thoughts, so many voices, like all of it, that's just the way it works for dispatch. So how about that part? You know, before you find out, and even after you find out, you know, then there's notifications, there's stuff for you all. And I'm sure, you know, it's the officer out there who will probably do the notifications, but you're also helping them find that information.
So on that call in particular, the families were out there already. So we didn't really have to do many notifications. But later in the evening, we did have to send officers back over to the house because the family never showed up at the hospital. But they're not from here, so I don't think that they understood.
Right.
Because there was one girl, I believe, at the time that they thought she had made it, like she made it enough to transport her to the hospital.
Mm-hmm.
And I just don't think they knew what to do. So as far as notifications and stuff, that was it on that one. But yeah, still having to do other calls and, you know, dealing with all of the other calls that are coming in and runs and dispatching those and making sure we have stations covered and stuff like that. So it's not ever just one thing. And I can do that flawlessly at work. I can multitask at work like nothing. But when I'm out of work, don't ask. Don't ask me. Because it's like I just shut it off.
Right.
And I can't do it.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, and it's... it's a hard thing, not just, you know, a drowning alone, but when it has to do with children as well, you know, that makes it that much more hard.
Yeah.
And
calls are always bad.
Yes. You have to go through so much more and everything. So was there any like debriefing or anything that you were involved in, or I mean, how did that go down?
Not for that call. There wasn't. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, we all kind of with each other that were working that night, you know, we just check in with each other throughout that the night, the rest of the night. And
that is good.
You know, make sure that we're all good and stuff like that. But yeah, that for that one, we did not have, we probably could have.
Yeah.
But unfortunately for us, that's the bad side of it too. Sometimes like,
right.
We kind of just compartmentalize things and we're okay with some things that we should probably not be okay with.
Right. Yeah. You know, there are a lot of places that don't have dispatch come into those debriefings, which, you know, my center, the last center that I was at, it was kind of like that for a long time. They didn't have us come in. You know, people would say, oh, you guys weren't really out there. Like, you're the ones who took the call.
Exactly.
You know, there's a part of this story that you don't know.
Yeah.
And I remember the first debriefing that I went to, we were telling our side. Everybody got a chance, and when it got to us, everyone was sitting there like with their eyes popped out. And I remember someone, I don't remember who said it, but someone out of nowhere said, why haven't you all been here before? Like, this is a side that we've never known.
Exactly.
And some of the, like, the more, I'll just say, seasoned people out in the field just kind of looked at each other like,
we've been ignoring them this whole time.
Right.
Yeah. The other two calls, we were very, very much welcomed and involved in the briefings. And
that's good.
I just don't think that they really had one for that call, unfortunately. I mean,
right. Yeah. Yeah. You know, and some of them they don't, you know, some of them they don't at all. But what was good is what you said was the fact that all of you were checking in on each other. And that's probably one of the best things, because for a long time, at least for myself early on, 2001 going on, it seemed a little bit taboo, you know, to be able to talk.
And, you have share feelings? Certain things. What?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. For sure. Yeah. You know, nobody wanted to look weak or anything, but, you know, we eventually started doing the same thing. We were talking, checking in on each other, and things got a lot better. You know, even morale went up because we were all actually talking to each other. So that's a good thing to hear. Now, there was another incident that you dealt with, and this was a few months ago, right? I mean, it wasn't too long ago. This was at a mall. Mm-hmm. It was a mall shooting and all. You know, kind of take us through this.
Yeah, that was pretty recent, actually. Mm-hmm. And we had just had shift change. Mm-hmm. Like, if this had happened, I don't know, 10, 15 minutes sooner, it would have been a complete mess, I think, because we were changing out and people weren't logged in. Like, we were logging out and logging in, and it would have been a complete mess. But we had all just got sat down. We were all just kind of, you know, doing our start of the shift, joking with each other, talking, answering calls. And then all of a sudden, our phone screens, they lit up like I have never seen before, ever. And we're like, oh God, something. We thought it was going to be a wreck. Never in our wildest dreams did we think that it was going to be an active shooter at the mall. So we start getting calls, like our phone screen, every single line was lit up. They were rolling over to non-emergency lines. They were rolling over to backup phones to other counties. It was just so much. And even the calls that we were getting, not everybody knew what was going on. Everybody knew that somebody was shooting. Some people thought that there were two people shooting. Some people thought that they were running towards an exit. So literally everybody had a different perspective of what they were seeing and what was going on. So just trying to get all of that information. And I mean, we had people started quickly. But trying to get all that information and deciphering what's what and what's really happening and telling them where to go. And I was on the fire console that night, thank goodness, because which I would hardly ever say, because I love the police side,
right?
But fire knows incident command very well. So it was very smooth on the fire side. Like, I mean, don't get me wrong, there was still a lot to do, starting people, you know, station coverage, stuff like that. But yeah, it was a lot. And it's a call that I hope I never have to have again.
See, and so for those who are watching and listening, you know, this was this active shooter incident that happened at this mall. But there was also, you know, a bystander that was there that was armed, who ended up taking out the shooter. And, you know, obviously, you know, would have ended up saving, you know,
if he had
whoever
not,
knows how many lives that could have
because
been.
Because it was packed. I mean, it was. Well, we changed shifts at 5:30. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, that's everybody going after work, going to the mall. I mean, it was busy.
Right.
So that's also why we got that there were two shooters.
Yeah.
But we didn't know that. Even when we started, by the time we started getting calls, it was over. But nobody knew that.
Really?
Because they, I mean, to hear the after when they were talking about him shoot, the bystander shooting the gunman, they said it was like 16 seconds or something like that. Some crazy little amount of time. Like
right.
The thought of him to be able to react the way he did was insane.
Wow.
But nobody knew mm-hmm. when they were calling that it was over. They just knew that there were two people shooting in the food court.
Right. Yeah. And it's, I can just imagine, you know, the type of chaos that's going on, not just there, but also, you know, in that room with all of you. Cause like you said, you didn't know.
Yeah.
And then everyone else who's going there, they're probably also thinking, what more information can they get for us? And you all are in there getting as much as you can,
sure.
and just not really knowing fully.
And then, you know, like I was talking about with the drownings, we were still taking other calls too, mm-hmm. right?
Right. Yeah. So, 911 doesn't stop.
I was working overtime that night. That's why I was there. And the supervisor on the shift got a call and said that his daughter had been shot. She was at the mall. And they took off running when the shooting started and got home and didn't realize until they got home that she was hurt. So now we have the scene at the mall and this person that's still from the mall, involved at the mall, at another house. Thankfully, she was not actually, I mean, she was shot, but not, it was more of a graze. Then, like, she was actually really hurt.
Yeah.
She was in pain.
Right, I'm sure. Right. Yeah, exactly.
But she was lucky. Wow. So, yeah, it was intense for a long time that night.
So then after everything is over, people are out there. It's not really over because there's still other stuff going on, right? There's
for sure.
other things to process. So what is that like then, you know, for all of you in there as this is, you know, now in the aftermath stages?
Well, it didn't really go to aftermath for us until middle of the night mm-hmm. sometime. I mean, it was like a all day kind of thing.
Yeah.
Because after they finished at the mall and clearing the mall and making sure there were was nothing else going on there and everybody was out and safe and whatnot, they went to the suspect's apartment to see what they could. So it was a whole other, you know, SWAT call
wow.
to go to his apartment to make sure that everything was okay there and that there wasn't anything else. So once everything was done, you know, we just kind of sat back and we're like,
right.
You know, like
listening to you, I don't know if I've been breathing as I'm listening to you.
We could finally breathe because all of our people were safe. Everything was okay, mm-hmm. you know, as okay could be. But that was when we could finally be like, you know, talk to each, like we couldn't even really talk to each other. There was so much going on. But yeah,
wow.
Close to the end of the shift, we could just finally take a break, take a breather and be like, wow. Like that really just happened.
Right. Yeah. And you know, sometimes it happens just like that.
Yeah.
And other times it happens like that, but yes. you're still processing and processing and, you know, aftermath and things are still going just like this. And it's proud of all of you. Like, well done.
Thank you.
That was a good job.
Yeah.
That was awesome.
It was definitely, we couldn't have asked for any better, honestly. Mm-hmm. The way that, they had problems outside with what they had going on. But as far as us in the room, the team that was together that night was just flawless, absolutely flawless. And I couldn't have asked to be with anything better.
Amazing.
Yeah. I was to sit back and think of it, you know, like it really was amazing.
Right. It could have gone completely different.
It could have.
Yeah.
Like I said, if it had been 10 minutes earlier, it probably would have been a lot different. I mean, it would have taken us a few minutes to get our footing, right?
Right, yeah.
And get everything. But no, thankfully, we were all already logged in and switched over. And
damn.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Now, this last call before we get into the wrap-up of this episode, which has been amazing to have you on here and talk to you about all of this. There was a call that had come in where an officer had said something specifically. And I wanted you to kind of take us through that call.
The following audio is from the incident that Veronica will explain here momentarily. And a warning is this audio might not be suitable for all audiences.
It's Charlie 03, let's try it. It's Charlie 03.
Hey, 03, go ahead. Yeah.
Three. I'm entrapped. I should have run for me at 1060. 300 west. Chef 300 south.
South
to the T's. All the way down. I'm not sure the current location when Diego took off from is 300 south, westbound to the T's. I'm trapped. It's not good.
300
south, where at T's? 56 is around from Franklin. 56. Control to my family level.
300 south at the T's. 803, keep talking, Fez.
It's not good.
Dustin, you keep talking.
Control, start lifeline.
Clear on lifeline. 803, we've got him coming. Just stay with us. County units, we're not sure if he's at 600 west or Mox Ferry.
Control, 300 south. All the way until it sees. I don't know.
East or west on 300 south?
It is west from 135.
Clear. We've got him coming right to you.
Are you west of the funeral home and west of 135?
All the way until the road ends.
We're coming to you, buddy.
Huh. 803, we have everybody coming. Just keep talking to us. Trafalgar 803, we have everyone in route. Keep talking. Trafalgar 803. Trafalgar 803, keep talking to us. 803, we're en route. Keep talking to us.
Yeah, I'm already here. Start extrication. There's a suspect. I don't know where he's at. He's somewhere around here in a truck.
Clear on a suspect. Extrication.
Control, please contact my family. Tell them I love them.
803, we are getting them to you.
Okay, so it was the middle of the night. We had a few couple calls going on. I don't even remember what those calls were. And actually, let me start by saying earlier in the night, we had a county guy get into a wreck. Now, we all know when officers hit those little orange buttons on their radios, how those make us feel.
Right, yes.
And 99% of the time, they are accidental pushes.
Yeah.
So one of the alarms goes off. And we're like, oh gosh, here we go. Somebody's hit their button again.
Right.
So the dispatcher that was on county hit him up and he said, control, I've been in a wreck. And so this like is at the beginning-ish of our shift. And he said that. He gave us part of where he was. He said he is at such and such road in the interstate. And then he wouldn't say anything else. So we weren't sure what was happening with him. And then we got a call and they were like, I'm with your deputy. He's in his car. He's down this embankment. He's unconscious. So we're like, great, you know, just freaking out because it's one of our guys, you know?
Right. Yeah.
So we get him all taken care of. He was hurt, but not badly.
Yeah.
They got him transported, you know, made all of our notifications, stuff like that. Went on with our shift. So it's the middle of the night. And we're, like I said, we had a few little things going on. And then out of nowhere, we get another emergency button. And he was very faint and hard to understand at first, but he had pursued a vehicle and wasn't able to get out on the radio. And when he pursued the vehicle, he wrecked into an embankment. He said, when we finally, like we were, we took, it took a little bit to figure out where he was at because he didn't know. Mm-hmm. So we're talking to him and he's like, control, it's bad. I don't know that I'm going to make it. Please tell my family I love them. So at this point, because I wasn't even on, you know, I'm listening. I'm the supervisor, so I'm not actually on a channel. But he said that, and I was, as soon as he said that, I got on the radio and I was like, no, you're going to tell him that yourself. Keep talking to us. Stay awake. Tell us. I don't care what you tell us. Tell us anything, you know, just keep talking to us.
Right.
I said, help is coming. All like everybody, the whole Calvary is coming. Just stay awake. And he did. He stayed awake until we got them there and, we got helicopter and, you know, all of that and two emergency buttons and one night that were actually real the effect that has now when one of them goes off, like, you better answer me right now.
Right. Yeah. No. Oh God. I can't.
But that officer, he made it. So, I mean, he's awesome. Still recovering and I hope he makes a full recovery. But yeah, it was pretty crazy.
It sounds like it, definitely. But awesome. For you as well to take that initiative and key up on the radio to let them know, like, no, you're gonna be the one to say it. Just keep staying with us and staying with us. And again, I'm damn proud of you and just like everybody that you work with. Like, that is amazing.
Yes,
so good.
I was so proud of my team that night. You know, and we're all doing our thing. And again, like, we couldn't really process any of it. I mean, and then shift change came, right? And we're still like finishing things up, and so then day shift takes it over. But through all of that, the sheriff had made sure that he sent the CIT team into dispatch because he knew. I mean, I had to call him for both calls, so he knew that we had had a rough night, and he made sure that he sent them. And also, before I left, the first officer that was in the wreck, the deputy, he's part of the CIT team, called, and that's when I just broke.
Oh wow.
Because like, to hear his voice, he's like, V, because that's what everybody calls me. Like, yeah. they don't say Veronica, they just call me V. He's like, V, I just wanted to check and see how you guys are doing. And I'm like, are you kidding me right now?
Yeah, right. Like, how are you doing?
That's what I said. I said, are you okay? And he's like, yeah, I'm home. And I was like, wait, you're home? Because like, they thought he was injured badly. Like right. They thought he had broken hips, stuff like that, when they were getting ready to transport. So they thought it was worse. But he's like, no, nothing's broken. I'm home. I'm real sore. I'm going to be off for a little bit. But I wanted to make sure that you're okay. And I was like, you have got to be kidding me right now. Hang up this phone and go to bed. Like, go rest, because, like, thank you for checking on us. That's amazing.
Yeah.
And I'm so glad that I got to hear his voice before I left. Oh. Like, that really just kind of made the day better, even though what had happened right before that.
Right.
Like, we didn't really get – there was no closure to be had on that one before we left or anything like that. But we did on the mall shooting, and that – we did get to go to the debriefing for the accident. I went for the mall shooting. I did not go to that one. Some of the dispatchers did. But like I said, I had been working a lot of overtime, and that was my only day off. So I was like, I want to, but I also want to be home.
Right. Yes, so, exactly. Yeah.
But I did go to the officer one, and it was so amazing to hear what was happening when everybody got there, and you know, what they were seeing compared to what we knew.
Yes.
And also his wife was there at the debriefing, the officer's wife. So to hear her like talk about their family and their kids and how grateful she is, and it was just amazing. Because I'm not gonna lie, I was mad at him. And I told her that. I said, I don't know why he would do something like this and not tell us.
Right.
And she said, no, he did. He tried. And there was a dead zone, and he couldn't get out on the radio. And I'm like, oh, okay, well, great. Now I feel like crap, first of all. Right. But
you know, yeah. You know, you ended up finding out, even if you felt like that, you know, it was good that you,
and she didn't say that it was bad. Like, she's like valid. She's like, yeah, I would be mad too, because he knows what he's supposed to do.
Right.
So, but yeah.
Wow.
It was a rough, you know, about 8 weeks for me.
8 weeks. Sheesh.
There were a lot of calls.
Thank you for coming on and sharing the story. And as we go into the wrap up of this episode, I have one last question for you. And it's, if you could go back in time with the knowledge that you have now to talk to yourself, what advice would you give yourself?
Oh, goodness. Don't let the job make you not care. Always make sure that you're going the extra mile to help people. Don't let that go. Always make sure that you're doing the best for everybody that you can.
Awesome. Yes. Thank you so much for being on. This has been excellent to hear your story and learn more about you. And I'm gonna be right back here with you to talk off air, of course. But again, thank you very, very much for being here and sharing these stories. I have no doubt that this is going to help others, but also just kind of give that perspective side, you know, sure, that everybody needs from dispatch. So for those who are watching and listening, if you have any comments, questions, or you want to be a guest on the show, you can email us, and that is going to be wttpodcast@gmail.com. Once again, that is wttpodcast@gmail.com. You can follow us on Twitter. That is @91podcast. You can like us on Facebook. That is facebook.com/withinthetrenchespodcast. This episode is sponsored by InDigital as well as Carbine. Shout out to patrons as always. Thank you all very much. If you want to become a patron and help support us, you can check us out. That is patreon.com/WTT podcast. And a shout out to the Indiana 911 Professionals Conference for having us back here. It is awesome to be back. It has been excellent. And make sure to check out the conference and all the content that we have coming up as well. And this can be seen on YouTube, Facebook, as well as Twitter. And then you can listen 24/7 on Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, your favorite podcasting app, and withinthetrenches.net. Have a good one, everyone. See you in the next one.
You just listened to a Code 7 Network podcast. If you have any questions or would like to be a guest on the show, send an email to wttpodcast@gmail.com.